You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
We are the Borg. Lower your shields and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
Hello there, viewers. Welcome back to the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast for yet another episode in this second season dealing with the Borg and advanced AI. We are dealing with the Borg and specifically with Seven of Nine again this week after the last episode dealt with Stardust City Rag. We're going a bit backwards, weirdly, but we are going from Picard to Voyager. And as per usual, I'm joined by a very special guest and another returning guest, and I'm going to let her introduce herself to you all now.
Yay, I'm back. I'm Linda. Linda's back.
Yeah. Welcome back, Linda Butler, who joined me for a Lower Decks review early in Series 1. So it's been a while, but looking forward to reviewing a longer length, more serious episode of Trek with you.
Yep.
Awesome. You've had quite a busy last couple of days at time of recording as well, yeah?
Yes. Well, yesterday was Dublin Comic Con, and it was the first one in 3 years or two and a half or whatever it is. Yeah. So yeah, we had March 2020 booked and we were all excited and ready to go. And up to the week of it, we were still planning to go, even though, you know, COVID was kind of taking over. We were like, you know, it'll be fine. You know, it'll be grand. Yeah, no, it didn't happen.
Yeah. So my brain still thinks it is 2020. I
think. Yeah, exactly. So we were just happy to go to something that we have a ticket for, you know, kind of way. Mm. We didn't really care about the guests. We were just like, we're going to something.
I remember how excited I was just to get back at the cinema. It's like, yay, I'm out of the house. Woo.
I know, look at me doing stuff.
I can be social. I never could before, but you know, So did you have a good time at the Dublin Comic Con anyway?
Yes, it was great to see all the cosplayers back. You know, I didn't stress myself out doing anything crazy cosplay wise. I just wore a simple kind of a stealth reference to Assassin's Creed that nobody recognized, so that was okay. I knew what I was.
I saw one of your videos from the event and I noticed that your two little ones have taste. They were dressed as Spider-Man and Superman, so they got my vote because those are my two faves.
Yeah, and then my eldest was actually, you know, he was very specific. He was based on Lego Peter Parker from Far From Home. And he wasn't based on the movie version, but the Lego version, which was a tiny bit different.
That is some quality level of geekery that they've already started with there. Like,
I know.
Not the video, not the movie, but the tie-in game.
Exactly. Tie-in toy.
Love it. Oh, well, that's fair enough. Well, so you're all rested and ready to start talking some Trek with us today then anyway.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't say rested, but yeah, let's go with this.
Well, let's get going.
Let's do it.
So just in case we have any new listeners, this podcast does break down into sections. We'll hit them as we go and get to them, so don't worry if you feel lost. It's fairly self-explanatory, and Linda knows already what to expect because she's been here before. So without any further ado, I will jump into section number one, and that's the section that I call Healing Frequencies Open.
Healing Frequencies Open, sir.
Excuse me. So what this was, basically in the first series, it was basically an opportunity to get to know some of my guests and know some of their favourite things in the Trek world as a kind of icebreaker. But obviously we've already done that. So for any returning guests this season, I'm having to find a new sort of question to just drop on them that they may not be prepared for. So apologies in advance if that is you, Linda, and you're freaked out by this. But rather than asking your kind of what we did in the last time, we asked your top Trek episodes and things like that. So what I was going to do this time is to ask you what would be your three favorite or best characters from anywhere in the Trek franchise.
Oh, okay. Data.
Data. Hasn't come up yet, and I'm surprised about that, actually.
Really?
Yeah, oh, really. God.
Seven, and I'm not just saying that because it was a seven episode. I think I've probably based my personality in my 20s and 30s on seven. I'm just like,
it's not good.
You know, I don't. No. I'm like, she's kind of semi-Vulcan. You know, just why am I bothering with this crap? You know, this is irrelevant.
Oh yeah, as we'll get into, I'm sure, on the episode, it very much does start off with, "What are you doing this for? This
is a waste of time." Art, smart. But that's two. Is it three? I have to
three, please. Yeah, and then just some reasons why, if you don't mind.
Now, and Data and Seven are basically the same. I'm so disappointed in myself, but I won't say Spock because that would just be like the three most similar characters.
If you pick Odo instead, I'm just going to take issue with that because they are the same. Just all the way through.
Oh my god. oh no. Oh crap. I haven't. This is unfair of you because I'm, even though there's like hundreds of characters, I'm gone blank. But I'm going to go with Captain Freeman.
What an unusual choice from Lower Decks.
Cerritos. Yeah. Because she is badass and she's funny. I like Captain Freeman.
That's fair enough. I personally would have went for one of the Lower Decks crew myself, but that's fair enough. I just love Mariner and Boimler, to be honest.
They're obvious choices, but yeah, Captain Freeman, you don't realize how cool a captain she is because you're distracted by all the terrible ensigns that are bad at their jobs.
That's fair enough. That's cool. Yeah. Well, she is part of the kind of legacy of Star Trek captains, you know, animated or not, so why not? Awesome. That's fair enough. That's some good reasoning then. So is there any deeper reasons why you've picked those characters, or just that they represent your kind of lack of wanting to socialize or things, maybe?
That's it. We do joke, but Data was a real savior. You know, when I was a loner teenager, Data came along, I was like, I would hang out with him and we would both be loners together. Even though it makes no sense. They speak to me.
Yeah, I can understand that. I've always been the same, and I think I would probably pick Spock amongst mine for similar reasons that I've always, when I was younger, I did kind of feel like a little bit of an outsider and a little bit of struggling to fit in with this kind of the emotions of people and understand them, I guess. So,
Totally. And even to this day, I channel, you know, my inner Vulcan, and I just try
to
be a Vulcan. Yeah. Suppress all those emotions. Don't deal with anything. Just suppress it.
Again, not the healthiest thing to do, perhaps.
No.
Oh well, fair enough. That's pretty cool. And that's three fairly succinct characters, even though two of them are more or less the same person.
But
Captain Freeman, just for being such a badass, as you say, and underappreciated maybe as well.
Yep. So. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I stand by those.
Awesome. That's fair enough. Just before I move to the next section, I meant to ask you actually in the introduction, the introductory chat, have you had a chance to watch any of the new season of Star Trek Discovery yet?
Nope, it is unavailable in the Republic of Ireland, so I have not seen
that. That was so, made me so mad when I heard that, but not just you guys, of course, because there's various other places, but I was like,
some countries. So usually things are UK and Ireland because we're the same kind of region. We're English speaking Western Europe, but Ireland has been cast aside. We don't have that Pluto app thing unavailable in our
if you're listening, Paramount, come on, get your fingers up. Series is almost over now, come on.
and what I'm dreading, because Picard is still up on Amazon, we're getting Picard. I'm just dreading if Picard and Discovery have this big crossover later in the season or something, and I don't understand what's happening.
Well, they've only got two episodes left to do it if it is, but I thoroughly doubt it. I mean, I can't imagine.
Even a reference I would be so annoyed. But I'm already annoyed.
Yeah, it's understandable. I don't think there's been anything that I can really recall. I mean, there is back references and things but not like time sensitive, if you know what I mean. So
yeah, that's okay.
Because obviously there's references to things in Discovery season 3 that we know of from their past, but yeah. Anyway, I'm skirting around not wanting to hit any spoilers for season 4.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, oh, that was like 8 weeks ago, but also, oh no, never mind. You still wouldn't have seen it. So, so never mind.
No.
Have you managed to successfully avoid spoilers and stuff until now?
Yeah, I have actually cleared my social media of all track apart from Twitter. So what I do on Twitter is I just stick to my own page and then I go onto the trending page and I just stick with like politics and current affairs and all that exciting stuff, you know.
So I'd rather see the spoilers, to be honest.
I've no meme content. I'm just feel like such an idiot, just not like I'm kind of peeking through my fingers sometimes. I go on the homepage and I'm like, oh, I can't look at this, and I just throw my phone away.
It's weird because there hasn't really been that much spoilers of Discovery that I've noticed, and ever since Picard started last week, it's all been about that. So nobody's talking about Discovery really. So,
that's good. Good.
Yeah. I do hope you get a chance to see it soon, though, just so you can judge it for yourself and stuff.
Yeah, I want to see it. I can't bear that there is Star Trek out there that I can't. Just right there. And
tell me about it.
And what's so annoying is that I have no idea when or if I will ever be able to see it. Like, where the hell is this Paramount Plus? Well, I know that I will eventually, but we don't have a date yet, do we?
This is the thing. I was discussing this with DK in the last episode, and I said it's frustrating because they kept on saying it was coming, you know, at some point before like spring of this year, and now they just keep on saying it's delayed and delayed. And I was like, we've got nowhere to watch Strange New Worlds, and I'm just going to be so annoyed because they're not going to let it go to Amazon or something. So it's going to be. That's going to be horribly spoiled and everything as well.
God damn it. Well, as long as I still have Lower Decks on Prime, then I'll be okay.
So you probably haven't seen Prodigy yet either then?
Nope. Prodigy as well. And my kids, I try not to even mention it because it would make them very sad. They were very excited for that. And I don't know what to tell them.
I do think, as I say, I think I mentioned last week, I think I remember seeing somewhere that it was about to debut in the next couple of months on Nickelodeon here.
Oh, that is what I'm holding out for. Yeah, Nickelodeon will be class. Yeah.
It is definitely going there because they part financed it and it's labeled as their show. So
I know. Yeah. So it was exclusive to Paramount, then delayed release kind of thing. Yeah. So.
Yeah. But definitely annoying that there's a lot of Trek content at the moment that we can't see, but at least we're able to watch Star Trek Picard, so make the most of that. Do you have any quick, preferably spoiler-free as possible thoughts on the first two episodes of Picard then?
Not really. I am going to just wait and see what's going on. I'm not going to get all negative, but I'm just going to wait and see.
Are you not a fan so far then?
I don't like the character of Q anyway.
Oh,
so I was disappointed that they you know that he's in it. But I am an open mind and I'm gonna go with it.
That's unusual to hear that somebody doesn't like Q. I think he's a popular character. It's weird.
I don't know. I haven't met many people who don't like him, but I just don't like him. He's just slimy and I don't like watching him on screen.
Oh, fair enough, that's okay. But at least he wasn't in it much, I would say, maybe in that case. But I'm liking this already a lot better than I liked season 1, which I just wasn't.
I think I'm enjoying this a bit better. And yeah, there's some cosplay things popping up that I'm extremely interested in, so always
don't tell me you're gonna cosplay the evil ones and stuff.
They're the best ones. The evil empires have the best fashion taste. Like, come on.
Ridiculously oversized comb badge. I don't think so.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. But, I'm hopeful that the answers are going to be as good as the mystery for this one. But
exactly.
That's fair enough. Well, in that case, I'll move us on then to the next section. And as you know from the last time, this is called the hit or miss section.
What about my performance?
I'm not a drama critic.
So, yeah, that is basically where I will fire out to my guest this week. It's you, obviously, Linda. Random things, probably about 6 or 7 things at most from the Trek universe, and ask if you think they're a hit or a miss and a little bit of a reason why. And then we can debate back and forth if we disagree, which rarely happens, but does on occasion. These are just completely random things that I wrote down, just a big list of about 100 random items before I started recording the series and was like, yeah, I'll just ask about these. There's no rhyme or reason. I tried to fit in a good few that might might fit into the kind of Borg and AI theme, but I think I'm running low on them, but you might see a couple that fit that. So the first thing on the list for this week is kind of related to the advanced AI, and it's V'ger from Star Trek The Motion Picture. Is it a hit or a miss?
I've probably seen that movie 2 times ever.
Wow, really?
I'm going to... Is there an in-between?
if you want to, I'm certainly not going to be able to... No, you must decide one way or the other. So, yeah, you can say middle of the road, maybe. But yeah.
I'll just say hit to be nice.
I have
no strong feelings. No strong feelings.
That's fair enough. I'd personally say it's a bit of a miss. I really like the idea, but it does seem... It's a little bit derivative of the whole Nomad that we just talked about a few weeks ago from the episode The Changeling, you know, the merging with an alien probe and then wanting to sterilize Earth and stuff. Mm. So they've kind of done that part before. And you can kind of tell, I can tell, that it's not super developed, the script for the motion picture. So V'ger as an idea doesn't get all that well developed. It's just kind of, it's cloaked in vagary, and it tries to do that sci-fi thing of, no, you are not supposed to understand this, to get around the fact that it just, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense, really. But... Having said that, I think it's a soft miss, because I do at least like the reveal at the very end and the whole idea of why it's called V'ger and what it actually was and stuff. It was a cool way of doing that reveal, and it was nifty. One soft hit and one soft miss, so I think we're both pretty much middle of the road.
About
that, which is probably what you could say about that film overall in a lot of ways. But at least we got Wrath of Khan afterwards anyways.
That made it a lot of stuff.
I mean, it kickstarted the movies properly. Not that I hate the motion picture, it's not my worst thing ever, but and the director's cut, it's an improvement if anybody hasn't seen it. The second thing on the list for today then is the character Chakotay. Would you say he is a hit or a miss?
I'm gonna say a miss. When I first watched Voyager, we were like, oh no, a Chakotay episode, he's so boring. You know, we did not enjoy Chakotay episodes. And you know, if you ever watch an episode of Voyager, he's really just there for Janeway to, you know, fire the exposition. You know, he's an exposition type, you know, but how are you going to do that, Captain? And Janeway, you know. Like, he's just a yes, ma'am. Like, he doesn't have much to do. And then the Chakotay episodes are bad. They're bad episodes. The boxing one.
That was terrible. Yeah. Oh, I was just trying to. The only one that sprung to my mind was the episode Nemesis. And I was going to be like, well, that's a really good episode. But I was like, that is literally the only Chakotay episode that I can think of that was good. And you mentioned the fight, and that is one of the worst episodes of any Trek ever.
Abysmal.
Even like maneuvers and stuff is kind of boring. And anytime it got into when it tried to delve into this deeply stereotypical, like, I am native heritage, here is your spirit animal. And
I won't even go into that with the whole, the guy who they had as a consultant was a fraud. And it's a big question mark for Chakotay. I mean, he's a dodgy character altogether.
Yeah. I don't think he's the worst, but I would say the same with you. I would say it's a soft miss because I don't think Beltran's a terrible actor. I think he did the best he could in a lot of cases. Yeah. And there's some really good scenes that he gets with Janeway when they get to butt heads in like Scorpion, for example.
Moments.
Definitely. But as you say, the character as an overall is just very questionable, to say the least, anyway. Any character who gets focus episodes, and I can only name one in 7 seasons that was good, is not going to be a great character, unfortunately. We're going to get savaged by all the Janeway Chakotay shippers for this one.
Sorry, guys. No, I do not ship. I do not ship.
No, me neither. I've never really been that fussed about Janeway and Chakotay, to be honest. Never mind. Saying that, I would prefer them to Chakotay and Seven, which did come out of absolutely nowhere.
Oh, God, that came out of nowhere. What the hell? Yeah.
After he spent 3 years of like, she'll never change. We should just kill her. Maybe it's fine now she's dating me.
This is different now she fancies me.
I'll move to the next thing. It might be slightly less controversial. We shall see. And the next thing on my list is The Dots. the little advanced robots, and I can't remember the number, but specifically the ones from season 3 onwards that are like dot 29.
Oh, dot 7 and stuff. this is Discovery, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. No, they're a mess. I don't like them.
Yeah, they kind of came out of nowhere as well, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, let's invent something cool right now that we've never seen. Okay, no, that's just everything Discovery. I can't say that. But what I mean is, no, it just feels like a suit with a cigar saying, oh, can we not have some little droidy things in this scene? And then they have to invent a whole thing.
It's the whole Star Warsization of it, isn't it? Like, we need something that could be cute, like R2-D2 or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't want to say, but yeah, you were dead right. You're dead right.
Exactly. Yeah, I noted that a lot about Picard. I said there's a lot of things in here which scream to me about an executive saying, make him like that Han Solo guy, or make this like that Star Wars cantina. And
yeah,
no, they're not supposed to be the same thing. Okay. So you're going to say miss for the
dots. Miss, sorry, dots.
I would say miss for the dot sevens, which were the very first ones, because it made no sense to have them on like the original Enterprise and stuff, because they're way too advanced. But I don't mind the ones in the future, considering it's like the 32nd century. And I was like, if they just held out on having them, and then these were a cool new thing that was there when they got to the future, I'd be like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to say soft hit on that level, provided we just don't see them again in like Strange New Worlds and stuff. It's like, they were always here, and you just didn't know it during Kirk's time and stuff. But
I don't know.
I have to shout out as well the short trek Ephraim and Dot, which is a cartoon, which almost single-handedly sold me on them, because it's such a really cool cartoon.
That's another thing. I've never seen those either.
You've never seen it? Oh, that's
no, because they're the ones that went straight to Blu-ray for
they did.
So I didn't buy the Blu-ray.
Oh, well, you should. It's very good.
I know. I will.
Well, it'll probably be reduced by now anyway. At least grab it on DVD or something. But yeah,
get it on sale. I would
recommend it. Yeah. There's a couple of good sort of Strange New Worlds related ones, like that deal with the Enterprise crew, that are quite good as well on there.
I will definitely have a look at some point, but it just bypassed me because it wasn't available at the touch of a button. So,
and it was weird that they didn't do that, because Netflix put the first four on as extras and then just didn't bother with the second series of like six or whatever it was.
I get the feeling Netflix had no idea what was going on. They were like, what season is this? What show is this? I don't know what this is. I don't want this. It's too weird.
Yeah, pretty much. Probably.
Yeah.
I think they also had it just yanked out of their hands by Paramount at the last minute. Yeah. So we shall see. But anyway, so the next thing on the list then for today is from Lower Decks, quite appropriately for you. And
I'm already going to say hit. Don't even say what it is. I hit the hit.
Well, it was the character of Lieutenant Shax.
Oh, massive hit. He's amazing. Ah, oh, Shax, yes. Big bear.
Don't talk to me. I'm pissed off.
Yeah,
he's great.
Love him. The angry Bajoran. I love an angry Bajoran, because Bajorans are so peaceful and but he's bad. He's nice. I like him.
Yeah, I'd say the same. I think I love the character. I love the humor of it. I didn't love the plot they did about like him being killed off and then just coming back a few episodes later and never explaining it. I know it was like played for laughs, but I was just like, this is not. It's just not funny.
I just disagree with that. I thought it
messes with my head a little bit too much. I'm like, but how? And
plus
I just felt like stupid being fooled, because I was convinced that they had killed that character off and was like, all right, they're introduced, especially when they introduced the what do you call those guys, the guys from Darmok. They introduced the one of those guys that was and I was like, oh, this is the replacement for Shax. What are they called? Tamarianians or something? I forget.
Oh, Temerians. Temerians, yeah.
Temerians, that's the one. Man, I swear I do watch Star Trek at times. But I'd say, I'd say hit, but other than that one little thing, but yeah, that actor and that character are really cool, and they use them really well. I think the one where they went and he was doing the pottery class to try and control his anger, it was pretty hilarious.
I love that.
Great. Well, we'll see two hits in that one, in that case then. The next thing I had on my list, I'm just going to not have to do, because you won't have a clue about it, unfortunately.
Sorry.
You may be able to chime in on given your knowledge so far. So I'm just going to go ahead and try. So the next thing on my list was Zora from Discovery. Do you think she's a hit or a miss, bearing in mind viewers?
Okay.
Anything to do with season four?
Hiss. I'm gonna say hiss. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. It's interesting.
Because I'm assuming you have seen what's it called, Calypso, the short track?
Calypso. Yeah. That was it. And you'll have seen season three. I really loved Calypso.
It's very good. It's very like powerful. Yeah. And it's hard to figure out where it fits into the timeline, but I almost don't care because it's just really well done short film. Yeah. I guess. So
yeah, it's lovely.
Annabelle Wallace is really good as the voice of Zora.
Yeah, I was literally about to say that. Yeah, I loved the voice. Yeah.
Cool. I know you're liking so far where you think it seems to be going in series three of Discovery with the reintroduction, I suppose, or the introduction of that character.
Season three. Yeah. I thought it was nice. But then every time, I can't really talk about it too much, but every time there's a hint of calling back to Calypso and then they don't do anything with it, I was getting a bit frustrated. So let's not talk about it anymore, though.
The thing that kind of bugs me is that they don't, ever since they upgraded Discovery in season three, Calypso can't really make a lot of sense. And they still haven't explained that, by the way. There's no spoiler there. It's just kind of hanging in the air like, and, you know.
Well, that annoys me. That annoys me. Go back and fix that.
I'm sure they must be prepared to do something or explain it in some way, I'm sure, but whatever it is, everyone's kind of headcanoning it. So
there was the whole first season of Short Treks where they said, don't worry, they're standalone, they have nothing to do with anything, so it's okay if you don't watch them, and then they literally all of them tied in.
I was gonna say, well, the Runaway tied massively into the end of season two, so.
totally and Saru's sister, you know, you would have been let's not believe anything that anyone tells us.
I never believe anything that corporations or actors tell me anyway.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I knew Andrew Garfield was going to be in that Spider-Man film.
and no matter how many, like I desperately try to avoid the spoilers, and I had an inkling what was going on when I went to the cinema, but I was still a bit choked up when they all.
Oh, completely. Yeah. I mean, it's all in the delivery, of course it is. Yeah. But,
it was
awesome.
So, brilliant.
That's fair enough. Okay, I'll do one more then for today, if that's okay with you, because it's an episode. And the episode in question, if you can remember it, is the episode Collective from Voyager. Would you say that's a hit or a miss?
Collective. Which one is that?
That is the one where they first encounter the Borg kids that they ended up kind of adopting. Ew. So they're on a damaged cube, and there's the one snotty kind of kid who wants to rule them all. And that's obviously they meet Icheb and Mazzotti and Zan and Rebai and the baby that promptly disappeared the next episode and was never spoken of again.
Oh, no. I don't remember the episode. I remember them being introduced and thinking, ugh, who are these annoying kids? kids and Star Trek, I always go, ugh, the kids are annoying. Oh. And the kids are usually annoying, you know?
There speaks a caring mum.
No, they cast them to be unrealistic. They're not like real children. So, Star Trek kid episodes annoy me. I didn't like the Borg kids, so I'm gonna assume that I did not enjoy that episode.
Well, obviously it hasn't stuck in the memory very well, so probably not. And if you didn't like those characters, I mean, it was literally just them effectively, wasn't it?
But I will say it is a good idea to go back and show us Borg children and what happens to children, and you know, it was a nice idea.
I think that's why I would say it's a soft hit, because I just found I was fascinated by the fact that we'd done so much with Seven of Nine, and like, she had this splinter cell that had disconnected and she tried to reconnect them, and it never really dealt with the fact that she was assimilated as a child. So I think I was just intrigued of like, let's deal with what is this like for the children that have been taken, and what would it be like if they had ended up completely alone and there's been damage. And obviously it was cool kind of reasoning that we find out why in a later episode as well, that I've talked about before, child's play. It turns out that the Icheb's parents had basically used him like a suicide bomber. Not cool, but I thought
I do remember Seven having to be all maternal, which I
think
really,
that's where it
like
worked
that.
For me.
Yeah.
It was a nice development for her character, and much as the the main kind of head guy, as who was the antagonist, was annoying as heck, but I think that was the point, because he was supposed to be the voice that they had to kind of silence, I guess, that was representing the Borg. But the only other bugbear, as I say, is the annoying thing that there was literally a baby in a maturation chamber that they beamed over and made a big deal about the doctor, like, yeah, I've saved its life, it's amazing, and it was never heard from again. It's like, did you drop it off somewhere? What happened?
Oh, poor baby.
I'd love to go to this day.
Oh, we need a spin-off show for that baby.
The abandoned Borg baby. Yeah. Turns out they just left it on the doorstep of a space station somewhere. Did off.
Rang the doorbell, beamed away.
He's yours.
Oh, poor baby.
That's cool. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that was mainly, I think, largely positive with some fair enough criticisms. So that's a good place to conclude the hit or miss section, I think. And I'll move us on to the bulk of the episode. Which is the episode review. As I said, this week it is The Raven from Voyager Season 4, and I will begin analysis. Excuse me. Before I get into kind of initial fast facts and stuff like I happen to do this series about these episodes, did you have any initial thoughts or kind of remembrances about this episode before you revisited it, Linda?
Yeah, no, it is one of my favourites of Voyager. Okay. I love Seven episodes. She's my
more than Jacoby episodes, I guess.
Yeah, so I already said she's one of my favorite characters, but I love her episodes. She's a great actress, and she's just completely believable, and she's very talented, and I just love seeing her on screen.
Awesome. Yeah, fair enough. So you're obviously liking her in the Picard stuff then, that she came back.
Yes, I love her.
She was great in this recent episode where she was never assimilated. So very cool.
Lovely, spoilers.
Okay, cool. I'd say this series, I'm just dealing with starting off with some fast facts about the episode and then seeing if that brings up any talking points. It may or it may not. The first thing that I noticed about this episode, which I hadn't remembered weirdly, was that it was directed by LeVar Burton, which, come on, of course it was great. It was directed by LaForge. Yeah. So yeah, great work in this episode, I will say, though, because there are a lot of directorial touches, I think, that you genuinely notice, which isn't always the case, because a director is supposed to be non-invasive, I suppose, in that way. But when you think he had to direct, like, the flashback hallucinations and the hallucinations of a bird and stuff and all of this bizarre trippiness, like, he did a really, really good job with that, so... Kudos.
Excuse
me. Fast fact number two was a little bit of quite a lot of information I found out about what the episode was going to be. Originally, the idea was very different. Brian Fuller, talking to Star Trek magazine, recalled the first draft was called Resurrection, and it was all about Seven of Nine being resurrected as a Borg. The aliens de jure abduct her and tweak her, and essentially she goes on this mad killing spree. The first draft had all these huge chase sequences of the crew trying to get to her before she got to engineering to blow up the warp core. Until this last final moment where she's crawling towards the core, Torres had essentially blown her legs off, and Janeway is saying, "Stop this," while Seven pleads, "Please kill me." I know. It was ultimately decided by the show's writers that this story was soulless and needed to actually be about something rather than just mindless action and turning Seven into some unstoppable Terminator woman. So, Linda, are you gutted we didn't get that fantastic landing episode?
That sounds amazing. I want to see it, but I'm not sure it would have been a better episode, but I definitely want to see that.
I don't think it would have been super appropriate for a family show by the sounds of it. No. You know, sounds very dark, but pleased they went into a bit more character depth than they were, right? It needed to be about something specifically, so what they hit on was good. Excuse me. And that relates to my third fast fact. Speaking of which is that Brannon Braga had a flash of inspiration for what to make this about when he was watching the movie Citizen Kane, with the image and idea of Rosebud replaced by a raven and what that would ultimately be revealed to mean to Seven of Nine. So we have, I suppose, obliquely, we've got Orson Welles to thank for actually having a bit of character depth.
I did like what he did there. I did like that, because then Janeway's realization moment is like, Rosebud, of course.
Very much. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, that's fabulous, because we are a step behind her as the audience until it's revealed. And then when it is, I was like, that is a really cool reveal of what that actually meant. So,
awesome. That was cool.
Fast fact number four was just something that I found out upon reviewing kind of how this episode was received by other people. It was said that many viewers believed Seven's self-examination in this episode and facing her inherently human nature was too soon in the character's evolution. Brian Fuller agreed that he thought the episode took her a bit far and she was pulled back immediately after that because she became too vulnerable too fast and they thought, oh God, we're blowing it. We have to mine this a little more. I would say I disagree. I was annoyed by the fact that she never got a chance to actually develop in the time she was on the show. After this, they did pull her back and it was completely just she had to remain stoic and not develop emotionally or anything in any kind of way. So I was also really grateful when Picard came and I was like, oh, thank God she's developed. She's actually, you know, grown a little bit as a person. I was intrigued as a fan of the character if you would disagree with me and think, no, it would be fair to mind that a bit more, or if you'd be a bit more on my side, I guess.
Yeah, no, it was episode six of season four. So, I'm glad we got some development there. We needed to know her backstory. I'm glad we got the backstory. I'm glad we got some emotions, some humanity there. I don't remember what the five episodes, well, what the, you know, three or four episodes before that.
Because I watched series four a lot.
Yeah.
There was a couple of things. I mean, obviously the gift was the one that was like, she was just getting de-assimilated and that was in depth. But even then, I mean, the promise of the moment at the end of that episode where it was like the child you spoke of, her favorite color was red. It's like, oh, she's tapping back into her humanity. And the more they stepped away from that, the less I was interested because I was like, you're never going to develop it.
I know. But then at the same time, you can, you know, it's nice to have Seven. You can always rely on what she's, you know, how she's going to react. I just love the Borg Seven. I love the Borg Seven. And like I said, I did base myself on Borg Seven. I wouldn't have been that interested in Annika going full human immediately, you know.
I wouldn't say that. I mean,
but
it wasn't super interesting even in like, you know, Matrix Zero, for example, where she does just switch to like full human and it's kind of like, all right, a bit too much too soon. But I think if anything, despite the flaws I have with the show, Picard shows you that you can develop her humanity and still have her be fundamentally the same character. It doesn't have to be a mutually exclusive kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. And I loved, spoiler alert, but I loved the bit in Picard where she's, you know, doing a kind of self-diagnostic.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I mean, she isn't intelligent. She wouldn't lose her, you know, intelligence and her experience just because she tapped a bit more into some humanity. But anyway, I'll get into that when we deal with some things in the episode, I'm sure. But the next thing that I was writing down, and apologies if anybody feels like this is an attack on the episode, it's not. It's just being a nerd, I do like to note the occasional continuity error and things. Mm-hmm. So I have noticed a couple of them. The first one that there's a reversed stock shot of a Voyager shuttlecraft where the registry number is notably reversed in mirror image so that it reads a kind of blurry 65647. and it's reused here. It was also used apparently in the episode Maneuvers, but I am going to pop a picture up because I did manage to get a screen grab when I was watching the episode, and yes, it is horribly noticeable now, that this image has just been flipped.
To be fair, in the 90s and noughties, nobody would have noticed everyone's TVs. You know,
probably
14-inch.
True. I mean, they did have videos, but it would be hard, I suppose, to get.
So they probably were like, "Let's flip it. No one's gonna notice." So they didn't think we would be, you know, zooming in on massive screens in 2022 and go, "Hey, wait a second."
I wasn't expecting to notice it. I was like, "I'm not going to see anything if I don't notice it." But the fact was that I was able to pause it and then took a picture of my TV screen and was like, "Yeah, I feel like I've achieved something. Like I've discovered a cheat code because I found their mistake."
An Easter egg,
The only other thing is, this is really nitpicky, but it's just funny to me. According to the Doctor, this episode takes place 3 weeks after Seven's de-assimilation in the gift. He says it's been 3 weeks before she has to she has to start eating food. However, later in the episode, Captain Janeway says that Seven of Nine's been living in the cargo bay for 2 months.
Oh, for God's sake.
Little bit of a discrepancy there. We've lost five weeks somewhere.
That is what you get when you have a team of writers. You need to be on the same page, literally. well.
That does sometimes annoy me. I'm still annoyed about the fact that the Enterprise E has just no one knows how many decks it has. It has 26 decks, then it has 24, then it has like 27 at one point, and it's
oh god,
already. That famous with that one in First Contact when he says the ball control deck's 26 up to 11, then he tells Lily the ship has 24 decks. Where are the other two?
Oh dear.
Anyway, excuse me. So yeah, the next thing I wanted to talk about is something that I've discussed at length. So again, apologies if it's annoying, because I discussed this a lot during our review of Regeneration. But obviously this episode and a couple of other things in Voyager offer some continuity problems to the whole question of the Borg.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Initially, no explanation is offered as to how the Hansons got to the Delta Quadrant in a few years. But I will personally say that is noted in a lot of places where they initially reviewed the episode, but it was answered in Dark Frontier. So that's one continuity thing I have no issue with, because they did answer it. And if you watch the episode carefully, they do say that her parents were working on advanced stuff and things. So you could probably get it away. So that one I'm not bothered about. But the episode, of course, is the first of several on both Voyager and Enterprise that contradict Q Who, as well as statements made in Death Wish that support that episode. By establishing the Borg were well aware of humans and Starfleet years before Q apparently introduced Picard and crew to them. Obviously, Regeneration retroactively established at least some Borg knew humanity earlier, but the Borg Collective would not have this knowledge till the drones returned to Borg space centuries later. What a mess this became, really, didn't it? It's a shame, because I really love the impact of Q Who, but even within that episode, as people have rightly pointed out, they do say it's the Borg are the same people who have been scooping up places in the neutral zone for like a year. So they've been on their way anyway. I guess I can kind of forget, especially with the cleverness that they, the sort of predestination paradox they introduced in Regeneration, of like they were on their way because they might have just finally received the signal, and I can get on board with that. But then you throw in, it turns out they'd assimilated some humans like 20 years beforehand as well, and it just becomes a very...
So it's 20 years ago she was assimilated. So that was 20 years, wasn't it? Didn't she say 20?
Yeah, I mean, again, this is it's questionable. It's listed as being in 2250 something, but I did note that they foolishly in the last episode of Picard gave it a firm date and said she was assimilated in 2350, which doesn't make a lot of sense. Unfortunately, they really shouldn't have committed to that.
But oh god. Anyway, I know. I do like to nitpick, but it would break your brain.
It does eventually, but again, this is it's nitpicky, but it's just kind of. I suppose it's annoying for the impact it lessens on Q Who, but at the same time, it had already kind of happened. So I just felt like I should bring it up, because somebody in the comments or something would be like,
"Oh yeah,
I didn't like this plot because it ruined the Borg or whatever," but it didn't, and it's in certain character, so let it go, you know? So yeah, in my head canon, as I said during the Regeneration review, Starfleet aren't stupid enough to have just lost all this information after 200 years, so they just kept it secret about the Borg and only told a few people. And the Hansons weren't scientists, they were secretly spies who were sent to get information about the Borg.
Right.
But it's my headcanon.
She didn't know what they were doing, that they were just doing very important work. She didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't even tell her.
Precisely. Just before I get into the episode then properly, where do you stand on this idea about how bad of a parent or how bad parents they were taking their four-year-old daughter along on this mission? Because a lot of people in my social media were not happy with them for this.
Terrible. But did they? Because how long did it take them to get to the Delta Quadrant? She was only six.
You find out in Dark Frontier it was almost instant, because they just basically snuck behind a Borg cube too close and got sucked into a transwarp corridor.
So they brought her. They were like, let's go examine the most dangerous species we've ever encountered and let's bring our kid for the lulz.
There's literally a line in Dark Frontier where the Doctor says that, because Janeway's like, the Hansons were great explorers. They were great people. And it's like, most great explorers don't take their five-year-old daughter along for the ride. Like, it's true. They were terrible parents when you think about it.
Yeah, totally.
I do remember there was one person in my comments that was like, they had no one to leave her with. I was like, and find someone. Hire a babysitter, for crying out loud.
I know, right?
So you wouldn't take your kids to meet the most deadly, horrible cyborg race in the universe then?
I mean, I wouldn't. You know, that's just me.
Then you're a better parent than Erin Hansen. Yeah, that Erin from your Borg cube, wherever you are somewhere.
Yeah, and they must have had some knowledge that the Borg were actually in the vicinity. They could have put her in some emergency bunker or something, but no, she was just running around the bridge.
This is all to do with Dark Frontier, which I should really have reviewed. But yeah, they were beaming Borg on board and experimenting on them and stuff, and then beaming them back when they were finished.
That's right.
Don't
experiment on them. And Annika, go and play in your room for a couple of hours.
Thinking along, watching them, like, ooh, I wonder what that deadly thing is that looks horrible.
Terrible.
You know, they had a cool ship, so we'll forgive them, Matthias.
Yes, it was. It was cool, yeah.
It is. I put a picture of it on my little image here because it's my model that I got off Eagle Model.
I see it, yeah. That's snazzy.
The Raven model. It's very good.
I'm glad they were assimilated.
Yeah, those parents deserved it. Anyway, I'll get into the episode properly then, because we've rambled a bit much but it's what we're here for. So there we go. As you know, we basically I'm just going to hit the episode chronologically and hit some key scenes and things and try to not to spend too long on every minute detail, but if there's anything I missed that you wanted to chime in with, feel free, Linda.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
So obviously it starts with the pre-credit sequence, which is the return of the Da Vinci hologram, only without him there, because they probably couldn't afford John Rhys-Davies this week. First thing to note is that 7 of 9 actually has a new outfit, replacing the horribly impractical, male viewers on board, silver catsuit that they put her in for like 2 weeks.
and the brown was fine, but not much better.
Blue one was probably my favorite. The was bluish and grayish is probably my favorite of the ones they let her be in. So
until the lovely blue science uniform that she had for a
one episode in relatively.
Well, yeah, one episode.
So I think it's another thing where they've improved it in Picard, haven't they? By giving her actual clothes, you know.
Yes, and it's so much better. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. She rocks that leather jacket, I tell you. So, yep. Awesome. I did say in this scene, I really liked the use of Janeway as the kind of mother mentor figure for humanity, which is obviously what they're going for. So as we talked about before, she's kind of teaching her, you know, she's getting Seven out of the mindset of like the Borg being all Dilbert cubicle workers and like, no, this recreation is irrelevant. We are not efficient or whatever.
Yeah, like, she's actually giving Seven a mindfulness lesson, which is cool.
That's a good point. I hadn't considered, but yeah, you're absolutely right. But she's right, though. Janeway is right that, you know, it depends how you look at it, and it helps her stimulate her imagination and relax and free herself from the burdens. And I like that, you know. But I could say, you know, the Borg being all about efficiency and not having any time for recreation means that they probably have assimilated a couple of former managers of mine, by the sound of it. I love how kind of funny Jeri Ryan is in these scenes in her innocence, because it's like you said, she just seems like she's CBA, shall we say, with Janeway's nonsense. Yeah. And like, try something with the nose. Plop. Happy.
She is so not bothered. She's poking it, going, what the hell are we doing this for?
She even gives it like Spock eyebrow at one point. Like, try doing something. What?
I love it.
And this is obviously where we get our first hallucinations from the lovely concerning flight foreshadowing that we get when she sees Da Vinci's flying machine.
Yeah.
Sets up a future episode and this one. So there we go.
Yeah.
And those hallucinations and stuff, those vivid images, they are nightmarish. I was surprised on revisiting this episode just how kind of scary and intense they were, because my memory of them wasn't that bad.
They were scary. But and then she's later on she's like calling Papa and stuff, and it's pretty severe.
But I mean, it's when it's the fact that it's blurry and it's clearly like it's got some surreality to it, I guess would be the word. And the Borg are like chasing her down the corridor, and they just look just horrible. Yeah. It really does recall nightmares for me anyway. And I'm like, oh, this is why was I not bothered? This is a 15-year-old when I was first watching it, you know?
Yeah. I don't remember being that scared of it, but watching it back, it is kind of weird. It's kind of weird, but really effective. And the whole, I don't know if I'm skipping ahead, if they showed the Raven, they did show the Raven at this one, but the...
of course.
That's Data's dream all over again. Which is actually... Was that a similar episode? He was seeing the Raven, and it was calling him back to
I know they have something in Birthright in series six of TNG, but it's been that long since I saw it. All I can remember is that I think it flies out of the little dome thing at the top of the bridge.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That was cool.
But yeah, no, it is. I mean, but that's what nightmares and dreams are like. And obviously the usage of a raven is deliberate, since it, you know, to us it signifies death and horrible soul-wrenching loneliness and stuff, thanks to a certain Mr. Poe. So I think a very deliberate choice, because they could have named the ship anything. And I was like, I get exactly why they chose a raven to be that imagery, because, what would you have to represent something literally worse than death, I suppose? So, fair enough. So then we hit the credits, and then just after that we are in a scene in sickbay where Seven is just completely in denial about fearing the Borg, and like, no, I was raised by them, it's fine. And she seems to me to have all the hallmarks of somebody with a kind of PTSD who doesn't want to admit it, which I think there's a lot of in that episode, we'll get into more of it later, but there's definitely a lot of that it touches in. Where was I? And then obviously the Doctor, just some exposition, he tells her meanwhile it's time to eat. And he doesn't want to inflict Neelix's cooking on her, but he has no choice. So just a sly dig. And
this bit.
which bit is that?
No, I love the Neelix.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we'll get there to there. The only slight issue I have with this episode is that the exposition of the week, when Janeway delivers it to Seven, is so clunky. It's so clearly like we have to fill the audience in, because it's like Seven's having this deep existential crisis, and then Janeway gets called to the bridge and she's like, oh, the Bomar, we have to try and get through their space, but they're not being very quiet. Like, oh, come on, she doesn't care. Speaking of which, the next scene obviously just jumps us to the conference room, and man, these Bomars suck, don't they?
they're horrible.
The worst.
they are so petty. No, you can't go that way. We really like that planet. You can't go near it. It smells
they
nice
are just
and we don't.
Officious, snotty little punks. Especially later on when they're like, oh no, we said no. Was your translator malfunctioning?
And it's
like, get him out of the room.
And then later on she does cut them off. I love when she just hangs up on someone.
Oh yeah, when they're like, this will be an act of war, and she just gives it the whole
we don't have time for this.
Slip the throat symbol and I don't have time for this. I also love it when she gets to display how much of a badass when they're like, we will do this, we will destroy this Borg, and you will just adhere to our rules. And she just goes, escort them off the ship. It's more controlled than I would have been, but let's go. Speaking of the next scene in the mess hall is probably the scene you were referring to is quite key to the episode. I did notice in the course of my research that Jeri Ryan struggled filming this scene, because she said she'd been warned about Ethan Phillips, how kind of funny he was, and it was their first interaction. She said that she had to do half the scene looking over his head or looking past him, because she had tears rolling down her face just getting through one take.
Brilliant.
I want to see the outtakes from that. What was he doing?
Oh, he's just funny. But he was like patting his belly or something. I don't know. But he's a natural comedian. He's excellent. He's an underrated character, and he's the comic relief, but he's brilliant at it. And I think
I know he's quite hated, he's kind of the Wesley Crusher that tends to be the focus of fanboy rage, but I never had an issue with him 90% of the time, and he gets some really good episodes. I mean, look at Mortal Coil and tell me that that's just the kind of comic relief character. That's deep, you know.
He's excellent. But this scene is so good. But first she's like, oh, your species, whatever, and you were assimilated and everything. Really? Okay, that's awkward.
I said, that's kind of the disturbing behavior from Seven of Nine, so it already sets you on the back foot, but you're like, he is so patient with it, because he probably does, rightly think she's not trying to be rude, it's just kind of the only way she knows to relate, I suppose, but again, he's more kind of patient than I would perhaps be when she's like, we assimilated the freighter of your people. They made great drones, you know? And he's just like, well, lucky for you guys, I guess, then. You
know? I know, But then he just gets on with it, and then he's like really nice to her, you know, helping her eat for the first time ever.
Yeah. I did note as well, somebody wrote this in one of the errors, but it's such a nitpick, I wasn't going to mention it, but it is just funny to me that Neelix has a full conversation about, it's the first time you've eaten, so maybe we'll take it easy and we'll steam it and we won't stir fry it. And then he proceeds to just stir fry it anyway. That's not necessarily an error. That's just something Neelix would do anyway, probably. Just absentmindedly forget.
Silly Neelix.
But yeah, it is adorable when he's like the little shuttlecraft going into the docking.
Oh yeah.
It is fully worthy of Lower Decks, that one. Sort of, now you chew and then swallow.
Yeah. Like, and she's like, what the hell is swallow? You know?
But just gives him the eyebrow face. Again.
He makes a big swallowing face, and she's like, oh, right. Okay, I'll try.
She's great. But I think it really works that Seven of Nine being so adorable and this scene being so funny makes it all the more jarring when the Borgin pops out and she starts behaving like a Borgin in the same scene. I was like, whoa, that. I remember at the time being taken aback by that, and I was like, that really is deliberately woof. That escalated quickly.
I know. And I love when people just get to act. I love when actors get to act, you know, and not just say lines that they rehearse, but to actually do things like that, you know.
Definitely. Switch around. I did feel bad for poor Neelix because he was helping her out and she just pushed him over onto the floor. Oh, poor guy.
She totally did. She could have assimilated. That was kind of close for Neelix. See, he nearly got assimilated.
Well, as we say later, she probably wouldn't have done because she had the chance to with Tuvok and decided not to. So I don't think she would necessarily have went that far, hopefully.
Well, if she was going to assimilate either of them, it would have been Neelix.
Yeah, probably. Well, yeah, because his dense musculature or whatever would have made...
Yeah, you will make an excellent drone.
Exactly. Fair enough. There's a little bit of nonsense with the Bomar anyway, and then we cut to the corridors where there's a little hint of perhaps that initial idea for it when Seven of Nine starts marching like an old Terminator or whatever through the corridors, and she's not flinching as she just deflects shields with deflects bullets or whatever, or phases with her Borg shields.
And this is again Data going rogue. Seven's going Data.
Well, there's no such thing as an original idea, especially in the same franchise, I guess.
Yeah, but I love it. I don't have a problem with that.
Oh, I love it as well. She looks badass.
They're like, she's accessing the armor locker, and she comes around the corner with a big phaser rifle. You're like, yes.
She looks amazing holding that phaser rifle, I'll tell you what.
Yeah. Yes.
It awakened something I didn't know was there in me. I was like, I hate guns. What's wrong with me?
Yeah. Oh, wait, they can look like that. Yeah, okay. I like them.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, even the calm way she's like, force field? Nope, just beam through the force field to the shuttle. Yep. And then it's actually a really good special effect when they try to keep the door shut, and just blasts a shuttle-shaped hole through it and just flies out that way.
Yeah.
I feel bad for whoever has to repair that door now.
It's probably the dots. It's fine. The dots will do it.
Oh, my God. There's dots everywhere secretly that we never saw. Oh,
exactly.
What if it was?
Who repairs the hole? The dots. You never see them. You never see them repairing the hole. That's why.
just unbelievable the way she was just calmly and measuredly. She took out security officers. She busted through every defense and broke through the door. I mean, I've heard people react badly to Neelix's meals, but that's pretty ridiculous. I mean, that's an overreaction if I've ever heard of one, but yeah. The next scene, I have to mention this because I just couldn't, again, speaking of the Bomar and how they got away with so much, they outright called Janeway and the crew incompetent. They questioned her competence, and I was like, What are these guys? Are
they just how dare you?
They're like every annoying freaking superior or co-worker you've ever had that's like, no, don't do like that. Oh, again, it's nice that Jamie reasserts, hey, you're on my ship, buddy.
Yeah, and then they were there the whole time, and they're still going, you've unleashed a rogue Borg, and no, you know what happened. You're just saying that to be annoying.
They questioned the competence that she couldn't deal with it. Yeah, why don't you try and deal with it, Bomar boy?
Exactly. It's a rogue Borg. What am I supposed to do?
Awesome. The next scene takes place in Cargo Bay 2, which has obviously been Seven's room for either 2 months or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. We don't know. And this, you probably love the bit about Torres basically ripping it out of Harry for his obvious crush.
Yes. But I also love that they are desperately searching for any clue to where this dangerous Borg may be going, but no, B'Elanna makes a joke and Harry laughs and
character for B'Elanna though. I mean, she's still doing her job, but she's like, oh yeah, yeah, you sounded very interested, Harry, all of a sudden. Yeah,
yeah. And I was like, hey, we have a working relationship.
Yeah, exactly. What does that mean?
But mm-hmm. I mean, your relationship works.
Exactly. Again, if I was nitpicky, they do kind of find convenient Borg tech of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. It's not even necessary because it's just log entries, isn't it?
but why was B'Elanna's tricorder making a beep beep sound going, you know, what this is what you're looking for, B'Elanna. It's over here. But she's just like randomly scanning and she, you know, the tricorder is like over here, you're getting warmer. It's just a random thing, you know.
Knowing B'Elanna, she just typed in diary. Yeah. It's like, ooh, let's find the nearest most private thing we can find.
Yeah. Computer, find Seven's diary. We're going to read it.
Maybe a tear. But yeah. Which, I mean, basically what it is, it's log entries and stuff. But yeah, it kind of bugs me there's not even a discussion about, like, is it fair to read this? It's like, no, Harry.
Yeah, they're always doing that. They always do that to people.
Yeah. Nothing even private. Harry says later on, doesn't he, in like a future scene, he's like, there's lots of references to me in there. Yeah. I was like, were you looking specifically?
You looked. You typed Harry in the search bar, didn't you? Didn't you?
Harry came and then just, there are 1,000 references, but they're all negative.
Oh, he's
cool. We briefly get Chakotay remarking that the Bomar have increased their shield strength around their space because they're, as we said, the worst. So, and him and Janeway get into a turbo lift. And there's a really good kind of argument here. And it's, to me, I liked it because it was an interesting continuation of their debate in Scorpion, which I liked, which had Chakotay kind of like, we can't work with the Borg, they'll never be trusted. Which, again, is, in terms of his character, is a nice bit of continuity from what happened to him in the Series 3 episode, Unity. When he was like betrayed by the Borg cooperative or whatever they were called. So I was like, see, this is good writing because it brings in stuff that you could know about without having to. It gives them a little chance to kind of bash heads with each other. And it tells you everything about Jamie's character that she's just like, I refuse to believe that she was interacting for the first time. And I'm not willing to accept that she isn't, you know, that she's just a Borg at her core and she'll never be trusted. So. Okay, that's awesome. And again, Kate Mulgrew just plays it in such a way that you can tell she's fully invested. It's played to like, wow, I can sense the emotion here. At least I think, anyways.
Yeah, and then she comes out with use any force necessary. So, you know, it's still early enough. It's early enough in their relationship that she's like, yeah, we can still kill her if we really need to, you know?
Yeah, kind of see she was, I mean, it's very subtle, but it's like she didn't want to give that order. It was purely because she was sending Tuvok, who, as we know, is her, like, number one guy. Mm. And it's like, if she's going to be, you know, putting up any kind of force and start killing people, just take her out, you know? We don't have a choice.
Yep. But,
that's fair enough. Because obviously they have, they get told by the doctor they can, her nanoprobes or whatever are starting to reactivate more, but he has a convenient hypospray that'll stop them, but someone has to get close. Yeah.
Obviously.
Of course. I mean, it's
there's a hypospray for everything.
You're not wrong, but again, it's just, you know, you may as well just have them turn up in sick bay and have the doctor go, technobabble, cure. Works for me.
Yep.
So, the other thing that I noticed personally in here is she sends, like, obviously they can't get through the shield, so they have to send a shuttle because, again, in typical Star Trek fashion, that'll work. It's smaller.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever. I'll just buy that one. But I was like, how come Janeway didn't go herself if she's so invested in Seven of Nine? Like, I get she perhaps wants to watch out for the Bomar, but they're not inside their space and she's sending two of her officers in there.
Yeah, like, maybe that would anger them even more if she went. I don't know.
Again, the reasons are that she wasn't written to be doing it. That's, you know, the real world reason. But I don't buy that she wouldn't personally be invested enough to go on this mission.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah. They had two. I mean, they needed. They needed it to be Tuvok to give her to give him a chance with Seven, because you know, he's strong enough to be to be able to take on Seven. So if Janeway would beamed over, she'd have her knocked out in 2 seconds.
Yeah, I suppose that's where it kind of makes sense, because she wouldn't be the one that beamed over. It would be Tuvok, who would be with her anyway. So all she'd be doing would be sitting in the shuttle, and she's not as good a pilot as Paris.
She, exactly. Yeah.
That's fair enough. That makes sense. Let's go with us. That logical level. Yeah, why not? Or alternatively, she just doesn't trust Chakotay when there's a chance they're going to be fired on by the Boma. It's like, I'm not leaving. Fair enough. Where are we? So then we have 7 of 9 in the shuttle. And again, these visions just so trippy and so nightmarish, it gets really more intense. And we start to see the just random man and woman being dragged off and screaming, and a screaming Borg that makes way to the screaming bird. And I was like, wow, this is, again, how did I not remember this? How was I not having nightmares about this for weeks afterwards, you know?
Yeah, but, it was pretty freaky.
It's very, very intense. But the Bomar, being the worst, just decide they're going to try and attack Seven Shuttle, which is pretty silly. Because Steven just stomps the whole lot of them like a dance floor during a line dancing class. Just completely takes them out. And, but I did note, again, it's such a nitpick, but I did note that this guy, this Bomar, who's apparently in a ship taking her down, was clearly just filmed against the Voyager wall in the conference room, because it's super zoomed in and it just looks like the same wall. I was like, to be fair, why would they build a set for a ship for no reason? But it just, it always struck me, for me, the moment I first watched it, I was like, is he back on Voyager? What's going on? So yeah, Shuttle 2, which is the one with Paris and Tuvok, detects the fight, but notes that there's no casualties because 7 of 9's been watching the A-team, apparently. Zap and kill as many people, or supposedly kill as many people, and they'll just walk away. So there we go. Tuvok has to beam in because it's the only way he can get close to her, but she basically uses Uno Reverse to give him the Vulcan neck pinch. So
I love that. But, right, okay, so how does she know a Vulcan neck pinch? Is it because...
But the Borg would know it, wouldn't they? Because they'd have assimilated the knowledge from any Vulcan.
Okay, so if they have assimilated the Vulcans, then why does she say, your species, blah, 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 your distinctiveness will be added? And she stopped herself. But she's already saying that...
She's referring to him as an individual person will be added. I don't think she's referring to Vulcan.
Okay.
In my head, it was that. She was meaning you personally will be added because you're a great example of this species. Or alternatively, the writers just didn't realize.
Okay. But I love when other people use Vulcan neck pinch.
It happens entirely too often because I know Data definitely was able to use it.
Yeah, Data, Picard did it, and the Doctor did it, I think.
Okay, fair enough.
but it was always a great reason that they knew it. So.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I just like the idea of where it came from as well, that Leonard Nimoy was just like, Spock would not be doing Kung Fu and rubbish. He would do something that would just immediately... And I was like, yes, to be fair, he's right. So why not?
Yeah. Well, apart from that whole Vulcan martial art that they're supposed to know.
Yeah, well, I know. But, I mean, in terms of the character, though, it would look silly if he was giving everyone the Kirk double-handed punch and stuff instead of just like, nope, go down.
Awesome.
I love this next scene, which is the conversation between Seven and Tuvok, when she's basically, as I touched on earlier, she's like, I won't assimilate you. I want you to go back and thank Janeway for all she's done. And he sort of says, what you're displaying here is affection and sentiment, traits of humanity, hardly Borg. And we're cracking the mystery and we're also getting a bit of character here for both of them. Because I think this is the first time that Tuvok and Seven had interacted as well. So there's a great little... introduction to their relationship and how he doesn't like regard her as a security threat, even though he's a security officer. He's I think it's quite a good development of his character, because I can't imagine first season Tuvok being this kind of compassionate, I guess, in a way, and sort of listening to her and wanting to go with her to the surface to find out what's happening. So
yes, but I also must say that I ship Seven and Tuvok, because they totally get each other.
Well, they have now both been fully assimilated by the Borg, so...
yes.
So, yeah. The only other note I've made here is that Jerry Ryan is just outstanding, playing the kind of the fear and wrestling with that versus whatever this Borg urge is and her level of curiosity for what's happening. So I completely buy... I mean, it's in the dialogue, but I totally buy it when she's like, I'm terrified, I'm afraid of what's going to happen. And Tuvok tells her, well, you don't have to do this. And she says, no, once I'm back in the collective, the fear will go. And I'm like, you can sense the actual pull and the struggle, which is not an easy thing to play for an actor, because you're playing like two or three emotions at once. So I think she's great.
She took off with that character. She's brilliant. And I often look at her and T'Pol, and they were cast for obvious reasons. And I just love that they took those characters and made them so amazing and
yeah, they weren't cast because they were great actors, but conveniently and thankfully they were both great actors.
They absolutely were. And I think T'Pol is also an underrated Vulcan. I think she is a top tier Vulcan, and she's one of my favorites as well. So
didn't love the series 3 plot, the whole kind of she's got emotions because she's a heroin addict or whatever that tried to do with that, but
right.
Yeah. Bring about your eyes, that's a weird moment. So let's be fair.
Totally weird.
Anyway, off topic, but we head back to the Voyager. Oops, to the cargo bay where Janeway's doing her best, you know, FBI profile, getting into her head a bit by just pretending to regenerate the algo. And this is when we get Harry obviously coming back and talking about how he's read the logs, looking for a reference to him. This is obviously, you've said, it's awesome when we get the final reveal because she's like, you know, there's this bird that she keeps mentioning in her dreams. And again, Kate Mulgrew plays it really well, but when she's like, it sounds like a member of the Corvid family, like a crow or a raven. He was describing a raven. Why is that important? Now I know what to look for. That's an awesome kind of eureka moment. And she's still ahead of the audience. Yay.
Yeah, Janeway was just kind of left instead of going, oh, Harry, that's the coincidence because Seven's ship was called the Raven. And now we know to look for, you know, she just kind of stormed off. They just must think Janeway is absolutely nuts because she keeps just leaving.
Time is of the essence. She hasn't
trailing,
got time to
explain it. Trailing off.
She's not looking for clarity of orders, because then she marches onto the bridge and says, look for any Federation signature other than our two shuttles, Captain. And just do it.
Chakotay's like, Captain? Just do it. Maybe if you explained everything while they're scanning, you know, like exactly, just, it's mysterious.
But it, you know, keeps the pace going, I suppose, so we forgive it. Awesome. Yeah. And again, I do like again that they're ahead of she's ahead of the audience because we don't know what the significance of a raven is yet either. But it gives you a great moment when we do find that out, so that's cool.
It's good.
So Seven shuttle has landed on this moon. Which is incidentally the same location they used in Basics, which once I read that, I was like, oh, now that's all I'm going to be able to see, because it clearly is, isn't it?
I assumed it was just Planet Hell.
Just
redressed.
To be fair, it probably is. I didn't look deep enough into it, but I know there's a lot of CGI enhancements and stuff to make it look like a bigger vista or whatever. But
I do have another nitpick, and I know that, you know, they don't do this in much in Star Trek, but you know, it's always a coincidence that something has crashed on an M-class moon or an M-class planet. They never bother with EVA suits or anything. Like, they just beam down and they just trust their sensors that there's oxygen. Shouldn't they at least just put on some kind of a helmet or a breathing device just in case? Just in case there's any kind of weird gas.
It's almost like an uninhabited moon as well. It's not like, oh, this partially assimilated ship just crashed into someone's house and killed three people.
Yeah.
No, that's fine. Just a cliff.
Anyway, we'll let that go.
No, it is. It's speaking of that, though, it's fantastic character work, I think, when Seven is so uncertain and Tuvok is like so compassionate about, like, I'll go with you. No, you'll be assimilated. No, I don't think I will. There's more going on here. So obviously they discover the partially assimilated Raven. Which we don't get much of it, just like a crumbly sort of front section that we see. But inside the Raven, the visions become really extreme. And it's very kind of emotional and affecting when you see the horror of young Annika's abduction. She's heartbreaking, Jerry, when she whispers, Papa.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, when she's a Papa. And then the way that she completely regresses to a six-year-old when she's explaining what happened to Tuvok.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. I wish I could act anything as well as she did that. But the way she's like,
amazing.
It was my birthday and there were 5 candles and 1 to grow on. And then the men came and I was like, oh, she's breaking my absolute heart in this scene. But it's so good. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that she caps that off by literally lapsing at the end of that sort of whole paragraph explanation into then I became Borg. And then just complete stony-faced and matter-of-fact about it again. And I was like, oh, That would be kind of how it happened as well.
The fact that she remembered that first she was really scared and the men came and then she was Borg, and she remembered the next thing that happened was she was Borg. So she probably just instantly got the collective voice in her head and everything was clear and everything, you know, she probably remembers the exact second, you know.
That's what I mean. It's so almost more jarring that it's like she's not emotionally affected. It's like, oh, it's horrible. The men came. Then I was Borg. Everything was calm. And it was like, oh, that's so chilling. It's like, I don't think it would be better that she was traumatized, I suppose.
And in a way, being assimilated helped her by not, you know, she wasn't scared anymore. She felt part of something and she was instantly not a scared kid anymore. But it's, you know, it's kind of, did her a favor, but
not something we'd recommend.
Yeah. Weird Borg therapy.
Kids, don't just shut off your emotions if you're dealing with trauma. It's never good. Anyway, there is a quick scene of them turning off whatever this signal is that's been guiding Seven inside of the Raven, because that turns out to have been the reason for the implants popping out and her signal being led there. The Vormar decide they're going to just fire on this uninhabited moon where the ship is, because, come on, these guys, honestly. But Tuvok and Seven do their best Dukes of Hazzard to escape from whatever little opening they make in the shuttle, and they head back.
The pieces of debris are the spongiest I've ever seen. They're just bouncing around the place.
Seven, help me. We must get rid of these convenient-looking rocks and metal girders that bend on me.
Effort noises, but it's just bouncing.
That's
good acting. If you can make that look heavy, that's good acting.
Definitely, 100%. But I do love, this is a story kind of praise, I guess, but I love that after Voyager's been shortcutting its way for the last few episodes, I love that basically the Bomar are just like having none of it, and Janeway's like, once the shuttle gets on board, just take us the long way. We're not going to have any shortcuts this time. And I was like, that's a really brave decision by the writers, because, like I said, they've been like, we've just jumped 10,000 years because of Kes, and we've broken off another little this shortcut and stuff. And I was like, it wouldn't be like that realistically. There would be times when you'd be like, nope, that shortcut's not going to work.
Yeah, not today.
Exactly, yeah. So, awesome. So just to finish the episode, then we head back to the same holodeck program, and 7 of 9 is mentioning to Janeway that her imagination is kind of alive and well now, when she's considering the possibilities of what would her and her parents' lives have been like if they hadn't been assimilated by the Borg. And Janeway points out that she could discover it for herself, because they found her parents' logs and they are there for her to read anytime. And 7 says she might one day, but it'll probably be during that cool two-parter in season 5, so she'll have to wait.
And, I will someday when we've run out of story ideas, I'll do that.
Next time we hit sweeps and we have to have a big Borg two-parter, I'll read them then. But yeah, it does make me want to watch Dark Frontier though, because as I said, it ties in so well to this from my memory of it, so it does make me want to. But yeah, just 7 of 9 developing into that level of now she's just beginning to imagine possibilities, and she's listening to Janeway's mentorship, and it's such a great way to end it, that there's some humanity there, so that this trauma wasn't for nothing, I guess. And there we go. So any last thoughts before I hit the next kind of piece of the review then?
No, that's my thoughts. It's just great. I love this episode, and I'm
awesome.
Thank you for giving me the choice of this one, because
that's okay. Yeah. I mean, it fit the theme.
I love it. Awesome. It could have been one that I absolutely hate, and I just rant for the whole time.
Oh, I've done that for a couple of weeks of the last few, because it wouldn't be fair for me to just pick things that I love. So as people will have heard by now, I wasn't a fan of Unimatrix Zero or the Picard episode Stardust City Rag. But we shall see if I think this one was better. Spoiler alert. But so what I've been doing, if you haven't been listening then this season, is just for a little bit of extra flavor at the end of the review, I have been asking my guests for their favorite character, scene, and line of dialogue from the episode. I know it's very on the spot because I haven't told you about this in advance, but if you had to name those, what would you say? Favorite character, first of all.
Am I allowed to say 7?
Exactly what I've said.
7. I'll go with 7.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I said the same. 7/Annika, because of course the writing and the acting makes you invested and makes you really care. So for all the reasons we've said, she acts it really well, and it's all about her. So of course. So what's your favourite scene of the episode?
It would be definitely the mess hall. Neelix.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Fair enough.
That's yeah, and I know it's not in the character of the episode in, you know,
I can totally respect that. I said that my favorite was the literal and emotional payoff on the Raven when she reveals what happened, and it all kind of comes together. But you're not wrong. That mess hall scene was something I definitely should have given more consideration to, because it is great.
Yeah.
So, I mean, comedy's harder to do a lot of times than drama, isn't it? So, respect to that. And what did you have a favorite line in the episode?
You know, I did. I wasn't prepared, in the shuttlecraft, Tuvok asks her why she's doing something, and her reply is, "I am Borg," and that was it. Like she just, and it's like, "I am Groot."
You know? Oh no, I'm not going to be able to ever hear that line without thinking of that.
It means nothing and it means everything. You know, I am bored.
Yeah, it's great when they do that when it's in Scorpion Part 2 when, your weapons lack the range and cohesive range. I suppose you have a better idea. We are Borg. Tuvok's like, naturally.
Yep, not a yes or a no, it's just a fact.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Well, I've written my line down because I wanted to give it the full respect it was due. So mine is by 7 of 9, but it is... No, I will not assimilate you. Once I return to the collective, you will go back to Voyager and tell Captain Janeway what's happened to me. Thank her for her patience, for her kindness. I was like, that's such a perfect summation of the episode as well. Like, I'm being dragged away by these robot cyborg things, but there's such humanity in there that she does. And it was such a huge moment because at the time she was like, no, stop doing this to me. I want to go back to the Borg. And this was the first time that she was like, no, I note that you are being very patient and very kind. And I was like, yes, that's exactly that what we need more of.
And that was because I've keep comparing this to Data going rogue, and he's just completely, you know, automaton. But she's, you know, she's like that to begin with. But then she turns around and she's, you know, I know I'm being kind of bold here, and I'm you know, but just tell Janeway, I'm sorry, you know, thanks for everything, you know, instead of just being a Terminator and just heading straight there.
It's so sweet. Right, and so the very next section, as you may well remember from last season, which is my just middle finger to all the people that say it's not real Star Trek after the abandonment of Gene's vision. So it's a section that I call Gene's vision. Excuse me. So with this episode specifically in mind, do you have anything that you think from here that fits into what might be categorized as the great Gene's vision ideology of Star Trek?
Yeah, definitely. The Janeway giving Seven a chance, trying to get her, well, not trying to get her humanity back, but helping her.
Refusing to acknowledge that it's not as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that would sum it up. And let me just think what else happened in the episode that would. Yeah. No. The rest. Yeah. So the rest is kind of along the same lines. So
service to that idea, isn't it? So yeah.
Yeah.
I said the same thing, basically. Yeah, Tuvok's compassion, Janeway's support, Seven's genuine seeming gratitude, and it being all about her humanity, which is basically a long-winded way of saying exactly what you did. It's all about that sort of story. Yeah. But also the way that it uses sci-fi to examine a deep issue. So it's using the kind of Borg as a lens here for PTSD and childhood trauma, which you might could not necessarily notice, and maybe I'm just sort of seeing stuff that isn't there and being long-winded, but I think it's a little bit of that. You know? So.
Yeah, agree.
Cool. So, right. So then just to finish off the episode review, I will get to the audience response afterwards, but the next bit would be the conclusion and your score out of 5 Starfleet Deltas. So, do you want to go first and give me yours?
My score out of 5?
Well, your conclusion, if you have one, just like in the last
four. Oh, my conclusion.
Score out of 5.
I loved it that it was a 7 development episode. I kind of half disagree that they were trying to move too fast with her.
I did, but,
yeah. And I also think, like, if she had done this without the whole homing beacon thing and she was just trying to get back to the Borg, I don't think that would have been in character. No. But per episode 6, I think she's moving on. So it was, it was good. Like, it was kind of like a bump in the road for her to move past being a Borg. And suddenly, oh crap, I want to go back. But she didn't really want to go back. So, yeah. And out of five, I will give it a 5.
Awesome. Fair enough. Apologies if my conclusion's a bit long-winded, but I just had a lot of thoughts that I wanted to get down. So I just said, I think this is a fantastic example of a character study that remains compelling, affecting, and never boring. The Borg as sci-fi allegory for PTSD are treated with the kind of respect and presence that requires, with the hallucination scenes particularly being exceptionally portrayed and perfectly nightmarish. Likewise, the performances throughout are flawless, but none are more effective than Jeri Ryan, especially when she regresses to childhood trauma at the episode's end and the weight that brings to it. It's commendable this episode adds depth and backstory to this new crew member, and it's completely in service of character and story, not cheap in any way or exploitative for easy effect. I didn't even mind the aliens of the week, though they are the weakest thing here, since their function as annoying obstacles is well-defined and played in such a way that we do find them irritating. They also provide the wonderfully subversive ending, which is brave enough not to give our heroes another win, because everything is very real in this episode, including consequences. I think there's expert direction, enough action to keep you entertained, and a compelling, well-written mystery. But the episode really soars, no pun intended, when its emotional core is revealed, investing you in the characters and making you care. Tightly plotted, fantastically scripted, exceptionally acted, premium Star Trek, in my opinion. I also gave it 5 out of 5.
Yes.
So I'm going to have to grab a calculator to work out this average, aren't I? So, hang on, 5 out of 5. Oh, yeah, the average would be, the overall score for the podcast would be 5 out of 5.
No way.
And a perfect score. Only the third episode, I believe, to ever get the coveted perfect score. Story deserved. Happy with that.
Yeah. And it's not even the best episode of Voyager, and it's still 5 out of 5. I don't know that that makes any sense.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. No, yeah.
I couldn't. There's no way I could take a point for anything. So
no, exactly. Know. It's just great at what it does. I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not flashy and it's not like action packed or whatever, but it's great at what it does and it does it well. So awesome. Yeah. So I'm going to move us into the next section then, which is basically the audience interaction, or as I like to call it, just to be geeky, subspace communication.
Incoming transmission.
Excuse me. I do have some things from social media, but there wasn't a lot. So this was a weird one because I was able to find a ton of audience interaction from more famous sources. So bear with me as I go through them. I just thought it was interesting because some episodes I find nothing about and some it's been rated by like a million publications. So Cine Fantastique rated this episode 3 out of 4 stars. Star Trek Magazine scored the episode 4 out of 5 stars. The unauthorized reference book Delta Quadrant gave it 6 out of 10. Harsh.
Huh.
I know, right? Writer James Swallow once referred to this episode as excellent. Jeri Ryan said that The Raven is one of her favorite episodes, along with Revulsion, Hunter's Prey, and The Killing Game. Ian Gray at RogerEbert.com noted that The Raven offered a metaphor-rich engagement with childhood violence and memory. They point out Seven's story as an example of child abuse survival, which they suggest can be an inspiration to audiences that had childhood trauma. Mm. Fair enough. In 2014, IO9 rated The Raven as the 75th best episode of any Star Trek and stated it was one of the best episodes about 7 of 9. Fair enough.
Yeah.
In 2016, Sci-Fi Wire ranked it the 11th best episode out of the 22 episodes Brian Fuller wrote for Star Trek, remarking this examination of Seven's origins and trauma is a little slow, but what it lacks in pacing, it more than sufficiently makes up for in character building, with great performances from the cast, especially Jeri Ryan. They also recommended the episode for their 7 of 9 binge watch guide in 2019. Likewise, in 2020, Bustle recommended this as one of 7 episodes to watch as background for Picard, saying it was good for 7 of 9's background. And in 2020, Gizmodo listed this episode as one of the must-watch episodes from season 4 of Voyager. So,
okay,
fairly positive, I would say, overall.
Yeah, except that 6 one. Out of 10. What the hell was that?
I know, right? That was shocking. Completely shocking, but so yeah, let me just go. I only have one thing from the audience interactions. I thought I had a little more, but I guess not. And it's from Adrienne, who's guested on the podcast at least a couple of times now, or at AL Park Tucker 2, who said, I loved learning Seven's backstory. Number one, she sounded like Annika when she said, I don't know, after she froze staring at Leonardo's wings. And number two, Tim Russ is the perfect surrogate father to her as she's cowering on the Raven. And number three, Janeway is a great mentor. So,
yeah.
And then she just says, I heart Tim Russ.
Poor guy. I heart Tim Russ.
Tagged him in that as well. Poor guy, indeed. But awesome. So that will conclude our thoughts then on The Raven. And suffice to say, we both thought it was a bit lacking. Could have That was an awesome conversation. Thanks so much for joining me again, Linda, for this series.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Hopefully you've had a good time.
Yeah, always have a good time talking about Star Trek, especially Seven of Nine.
Of course. Great. So this is your chance then to plug your social medias or any other podcasts or anything you're working on, if you like.
I'm not really doing much at the moment, but you can find me at henandahat1 on Twitter and henandahat on Instagram. And I've YouTube channel as well, Hen in a Hat.
Grand. And you do have an Etsy store and things, yeah, as well, yeah.
Yeah, you'll find links if you follow my instructions that I just gave you.
Definitely recommend Etsy, that. It's great looking stuff.
I'm usually Hen in a Hat. Just type in Hen in a Hat. You'll Google me and I'll pop up somewhere.
But if you are getting in contact with Linda, no Discovery Season 4 spoilers, okay?
No, you will be blocked and airlocked.
Exactly. So, no, this was a really good episode, if I do say so. So I've had a really good time. You can find me, of course, at Iron Mike Wilson on Twitter, or my name most of the places. The podcast is at HOMTrek or HOMTrek, where you can find links to all of our episodes and things. And this series, I think, has been going very interestingly. We've had a good mix of episodes, and they've all kind of fit the theme quite well. So next week, we're moving away from the Borg again into another very famous AI who may have come up a couple of times this episode. I'm going to be reviewing the episode The Measure of a Man. And I'm going to be joined by... I may be joined by a couple of guests. I've had some interest by a couple of people, but I definitely will be joined by, I think, Captain Janie, who's agreed to come on. So look out for that one. And thanks again, Linda. Really, really do appreciate you taking the time to join us here and talk Trek.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Awesome. And in the meantime, viewers and listeners, remember, we are Starfleet. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.